The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Global Commission on Drug Policy released a report recently entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform. The report exposes how punitive drug policies have driven mass incarceration and grave human rights violations around the world. In 2023 alone, for example, over 3.1 million people were arrested for drug-related offenses, with 20% of the global prison population detained for such crimes, nearly half of them for simple possession. Beyond Punishment underscores the devastating consequences of prohibitionist policies, including more than 1 million deaths in the U.S. in the past two decades from a toxic, unregulated drug supply and overdose. It highlights systemic inequities, such as indigenous peoples in Canada being six times more likely to face drug-related arrests than white people, and also illustrates the disproportionate burdens on women and children that deepen cycles of poverty and marginalization. The Commission's report was launched at a side event entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. On this edition of Century of Lies, we're going to hear presentations by some of the speakers from that event. First, let's hear brief opening remarks by His Excellency Raphael Negeli, Ambassador and Permanent Representative of Switzerland to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the United Nations, and other international organizations in Vienna.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Global Commission on Drug Policy, particularly Commissioner Dr. Geoff Gallop, sitting next to me, for organizing this event with us. My thanks also go to the co-sponsors of this event. This is North Macedonia, Serbia, Brazil, the Czech Republic, Slovenia, Colombia, South Africa, and Malta. I commend the Global Commission for their report. It sheds a critical light on the negative impacts of punitive drugs policies and practices, from mass incarceration, grave human rights violations, or the use of death penalty, while also providing concrete examples of the benefits that can be reaped by pursuing an alternative approach, characterized by scientific evidence, public health, and human rights. This is where our Swiss innovative four pillars policy was rolled out, led by our former president, Ruud Dreyfus, who also is a member of the Global Commission. The four pillars include prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and last but not least, law enforcement. This balanced approach has been highly successful. HIV rates decreased while a robust offering of treatment options, including different options for opioid agonist therapy, have made a difference for many people who use drugs. Swiss drug policy has evolved steadily over time. For example, the first drug consumption room was opened in Bern in 1986. Until today, such centers have a meaningful impact on urban society and public safety, bringing drug use indoors while providing a vital pathway for connecting vulnerable and marginalized individuals with life-saving health and social services. Drug checking services that are available in many Swiss cities do not only provide a harm reduction intervention for direct service users, but also have been a key resource of early warning data. Just as an example, Harm Reduction International's Global State of Harm Reduction 2024 notes that the drug checking service in Zurich was instrumental in detecting synthetic cannabinoid receptor agonists in herbal cannabis in the city of Zurich. To conclude with, let me again congratulate the Global Commission on their report and on the continuing to play an important role by addressing issues that would otherwise be neglected. We look forward to hearing more details about the report and about the insights from our panelists. We encourage everyone to take a closer look at the report. It's definitely worth reading.
That was His Excellency Raphael Negeli, Ambassador and Permanent Representative of Switzerland to the OSCE, the United Nations, and other international organizations in Vienna, speaking on a panel entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. Now let's hear from Dr. Graham Alabaster, head of the Geneva office of UN Habitat.
UN Habitat has a long history of working on urban security and safety, some three decades of work on our Safer Cities program, which looked, of course, at the much broader aspects of urban security and safety, and which included, of course, drug use, among other things. And a lot of this work was related to a much deeper analysis of the social systems in urban centres and understanding better the inequities in systems, in urban systems, to deal and to cope with some of the security issues. So, of course, we did do a lot of work in that time and period on managing drugs and narcotics and users. But just by way of framing this, I mean, we all know that we currently live in an urban world. And by 2050, around 70% of the world's population will live in an urban agglomeration of some kind. That's probably not news to many of you. But what's very interesting, a further statistic, is that of all the urban dwellers, of all the urban space that will exist in 2050, 60% of it is yet to be built. And this is a really important statistic because it means there's a window of opportunity for us now to bear an influence on the physical and governance aspects of that new urban space where many of those in 2050 are going to live. So coming down to the issue of the Global Commission's report, an excellent report, which we fully support and align with, why is it so important for us? As I mentioned before, most of our work looks at the inequities in urban society. And I think along with all of you, we'd agree that we the most vulnerable in societies are the ones who are neglected. If we don't give priority to those communities, the risks to the more wealthy parts of cities and their productivity, their public health and other things are also seriously affected. So, I mean, from the drug perspective, there are three issues from our side. Of course, the issue of the human rights and many of the human rights abuses that go ahead of those who use the drug, quite unacceptable situation in many parts of the world that we have to rise up against. The public health aspects, and particularly the lacking in social care to address these issues of drug users and support them as best we can. But perhaps an aspect of public health that's not considered is the fact that many activities, particularly things like drug-related gun crime, do pose a significant drain on already stretched public health resources at city level. To treat one non-fatal gunshot wound in a US city, we're talking about $100,000 for one case. So if you look at the implication that this has in parts of the world to the resources it takes away from public health, it's a very, very important aspect that we need to consider, and one of the reasons why we very much support the regulation of drugs and reduction in drug-related gun crime, for example. The other thing is, of course, that our agency works mainly, we work, of course, with national governments, but our main focus is on local authorities and sub-national governments. And this issue of drug use, like many others, is something which requires a multi-sectoral approach. Multi-sectoral approaches really come alive at the local level, where a mayor, the head of a city, or an appointed official has to draw on resources from all different departments in order to manage this problem. Of course, going way beyond just the crime prevention, also the public health, also the education departments and many others. So it really is an area that we need to work on. We found that many of the good case studies that have come out of some of the cities have been led by city leaders, in fact. So for us, that's very important that we support those subnational structures, that we learn from those best practices. And indeed, we've signed an MOU with the Global Commission, and these are some of the things that we're going to look at in more detail and see how we can support and share the information of this good report with many of our constituents at the city level. So in terms of what do we need to do and what will we work on together to support this issue? Of course, our embodied in our new urban agenda is the idea of developing new urban policies. And of course, those have to be participatory in nature, participatory governed structures where local authorities fully engaged with the communities that they govern in order, and they work in a partnership to deliver new and novel ways of delivery of services. There's another aspect as well, which of course interests us, and that is the physical design of urban space. So on the one hand, this is about how we rehabilitate and upgrade vulnerable settlements and informal settlements, but it's also about planning the future urban space where many of these people will live in the coming years. And that means designing housing schemes, it means designing access to facilities that encourage people to adopt healthy lifestyles and that look at some of the basic elements of safety by the design of housing and housing setups and neighborhoods. Much can be done to reduce criminality and to ensure people live in a safe environment. And then, of course, ensuring they have access to services. Sometimes in the informal sector, the communities are very ready to work and plan their informal settlements more effectively. And quite often they have find ways of making space, even in very dense communities, to provide facilities to support such issues as drug use. So just coming really to my conclusion, Habitat, in fact, next week will be, the member states will be adopting our new strategic plan, which puts access to housing and basic services back right at the center of our mandate. And this issue, of course, is a very important part of that, about the development of sustainable urbanization and urban societies which are safe and healthy. We also hope that our biannual event, the World Urban Forum, the Global Commission organized an event last November in Cairo, which was very successful. We will also do some similar event at the World Urban Forum in 2026 in Baku, where we will take the experience, knowledge that the Global Commission and partners have and share that in much more depth with city leaders and provide some of the good case studies and ideas that we wish to support. So I'd like to thank you once again, the organizers, for the opportunity to join this, just to say that we are very much behind and support the conclusions of the report. And of course, to address this very important issue. Urbanization has been exacerbated, of course, by climate change and, of course, the other issue of conflict. And sadly, in many parts of the world, this conflict. In these situations, people are driven into urban space and there's a huge impact on the ability to deliver services. So it's not a it's not an easy issue to deal with, but we do have some good lessons. Thank you very much for your attention.
That was Dr. Graham Alabaster, head of the Geneva Office of UN Habitat, speaking on a panel entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear more from the launch of the Global Commission on Drug Policy's report, Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform. Another presenter on that panel was Olivia Rope, Executive Director of Penal Reform International.
I'm really happy to be here to speak about one of the most enduring global justice challenges of our time. And that is, despite some progress, we see continued criminalization of drug use and in our world as wide-reaching impacts on people, people in prison systems, human rights protection, but also the communities that prisons operate in. They don't operate in a silo or a vacuum. And our Global Prison Trends report for 2025 that we will launch here tomorrow shows that much of the world, unfortunately, remains locked into these punitive drug policies that do not serve public health, community safety, or justice. Fariba gave all the data on the numbers, which are also outlined very clearly in the Global Commission's report. And I would just add that there are also people in administrative detention on top of these formal prison population statistics. And I think the growing number of people going to prison year on year is directly related to criminalisation of drug use and possession, and also poverty, which is interlinked. And these measures are really disproportionate, they're discriminatory, and ultimately they're ineffective. We see what the Global Commission on Drug Policies report outlines, and this kind of bold and essential vision that we need for moving away from criminal justice-led approaches to drug use. This really reinforces what we see on the ground every day. Overcrowded prisons effectively mean that there are human rights violations. It inhibits rehabilitation, which of course is the very purpose of imprisonment as set out in the UN Nelson Mandela rules. And we know that overcrowding in prisons continues, for example, in places like the Philippines, where it's over 70% of the people in prison are there for drug-related charges. In Brazil, for example, there's vague legal thresholds and judicial discretion is disproportionately impacting Black and mixed race people. In Kazakhstan, for example, there's a new law that allows life imprisonment for certain drug-related offences. And these trends are very concerning amid progress in other places. One trend that I wanted to highlight today is the link between drug enforcement and gendered criminalization. Our research published at the CSW in New York with Women Beyond Walls documented that women, particularly those in situations of economic hardship or violence, are disproportionately affected by drug laws. And in some places, up to 80% of women in prison are there for drug-related offences. And this is normally, they're not so-called kingpins or leaders, but women at the lowest rungs of the drug trade or for drug use, often coerced into transport or selling to survive, criminalized for their drug dependence or imprisoned because of their partner's activities while bearing the full brunt of the law. And many are primary carers of young children. Their imprisonment has a profound intergenerational impact, and this is rarely acknowledged in sentencing or detention policies. We found that women in vulnerable situations, such as those working in informal economies or people displaced or survivors of violence, are punished for actions taken to survive. This is not justice. This is the institutionalization of inequality through criminal law. And this brings me to another issue that we wanted to bring to the table today, which is one of the most severe consequences of punitive drug policy, and that's the use of the death penalty for drug offences. At least 34 jurisdictions retain the death penalty for drug crimes, and in 2024 alone, nearly 40% of all known global executions were carried out for drug offences, which is an increase of nearly 2,000% since 2020, as reported by Harm Reduction International. In some cases, these executions involve foreign nationals, people with mental health conditions, and in many cases, for people who were denied a fair trial. The death penalty, particularly for drug offences, violates the most basic principle that capital punishment should only apply, if it does, to the most serious crimes, a threshold that drug offences does not meet under international law. Colleagues, we see from the data, it's clear, criminalising drug use and small-scale supply does not reduce crime, it does not reduce harm, it breaks apart families, overburdens justice systems and fills prisons with people who are at least who are the least able to access fair legal and human rights protections. Positively, more than 66 jurisdictions have now adopted some form of decriminalisation, and this is certainly a promising trend. And this decriminalisation must be implemented in ways that are meaningful and sustainable and grounded in the evidence that we have, the wealth of evidence that we have, and on public health and the impacts for human rights. So we also call on for decriminalisation of personal drug use and possession alongside all of our partners. And we also call for the review and repeal of laws that disproportionately impact vulnerable groups such as women. Abolish the death penalty for drug-related offences urgently. And we would add to this to meaningfully include people with lived experience of imprisonment and drug use in policy reform to ensure that the reforms are effective and grounded in lived realities.
That was Olivia Rope, Executive Director of Penal Reform International, speaking on a panel entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. Now let's hear the presentation by Her Excellency Laura Hill, Ambassador and Permanent Representative of Colombia to the United Nations in Vienna.
Sadly, this is my last side event, so I'd like to begin by saying that Colombia's commitment to a more people-centered, more human rights-aligned, more defensive of public health global drugs policy is strong, will remain long after I'm gone. So you can count on Colombia. And as for my personal conviction, I have to say that everything I did here, everything I said, I believed. And that will not change with my post. So you have a defender for a change of this global drug policy that has failed decade after decade. You'll have it somewhere else, but I'll be there and I'll be still defending change. In another position, I will not be able to be this outspoken, but I will make sure that I will facilitate the conversations that we need to have. So, having said this, this is what I have to say about this wonderful panel. Thank you to the people around this table. Thank you, because you were there to build alliances when we needed them. All of you, civil society, Switzerland, of course, UNODC and the Global Commission. So, today's lunch is for us more than a simple presentation. It is an invitation to act, an invitation to rethink, reform, and reject the failed logic of punishment that for too long has shaped drug policy. It exposes how criminalization has disproportionately targeted marginalized populations, how coercive treatment practices violate rights, and how policies based on fear rather than facts have failed to reduce harm. And as I said at the 67th session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, Colombia knows these failures intimately. For decades, we were the center of a war on drugs imposed from the outside. We lost lives and we lost time. For decades, punitive approaches have filled our prisons, destroyed lives, and destabilized communities, often without achieving the intended goal of reducing drug use or trafficking. But Colombia has chosen to change course. And I'd like to highlight very briefly the recent adoption of Law 2292 of 2023, also known as the Public Utility Law. So, drug policies have historically had a disproportionate impact on women, particularly those from the most vulnerable situations. And by providing an alternative to incarceration for women who are heads of household and have committed offenses under conditions of marginalization, the law acknowledges and seeks to mitigate the challenges faced by women within the criminal justice system. And it represents a tangible effort to incorporate gender perspectives into drug policies, ensuring that justice does not come at the cost of deepening existing inequities. By prioritizing restorative justice over punitive approaches, it fosters a system that values reintegration over exclusion, enabling women to serve their sentences through community services rather than incarceration, allows them to maintain their livelihoods, support their families, and continue their education, ultimately reducing reoffending. These women, instead of serving prison sentences, can contribute to society through public utility services, reinforcing their role as caregivers while promoting social reintegration. And the law, we hope, is a model to inspire others. It reflects what the report advocates: policies based on evidence, rights, and compassion, not fear, stigma, and control. We will not reduce violence, incarceration, or suffering through repression. We will do so by investing in people, not in prisons. And let me close by thanking the Global Commission once again. We were especially moved by the report's emphasis on alternatives and what a different future can look like when harm reduction is prioritized, where people who use drugs are supported, not punished, where states regulate markets in ways that protect health and reduce the power of organized crime. Let us leave this room with a renewed sense of purpose to move beyond punishment and toward dignity, equity, and justice. Thank you.
That was Her Excellency Laura Gil, Ambassador and Permanent Representative of Colombia to the United Nations in Vienna, speaking on a panel entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!